Welcome to Kill Chain, a platform cybersecurity podcast where we discuss the latest news, trends, and topics related to cybersecurity, vehicle security, and really anything cybersecurity related. I'm Marcus Q, and I'm joined by Terry Reinert, CEO of Fleet Defender.
Hey, everybody.
As well as Kendall Bricko, our cyber forensics guru.
Hey, Kendall here.
Thanks for joining me, guys. We just got back from Manifest, the Future of Logistics Conference in Las Vegas this week. We saw some pretty cool, interesting things that we wanted to talk about and saved it up for today. So let's get into that. I'll tell you, the coolest thing I saw was definitely the Spot robot from Boston Dynamics. That thing is pretty amazing. They were telling me how like bomb squads are using it now, as well as a bunch of construction companies. And here's my question to you. How much do you think that thing weighs?
I don't know how much it weighs. I want to know how much it costs.
Well, a lot.
But I can imagine.
I was thinking it was going to be like 200 pounds or something. Those things only weigh 70 pounds.
Only 70 pounds?
Only 70 pounds. You can pick those things up and just carry them around.
I had no idea. Like, I've been actually following Boston Dynamics for a long time, and they've got some pretty awesome robotic systems. But,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the memes that you see online with the dogs, the little robotic dogs and stuff, they're actually quite hilarious.
Yeah, I was asking him. I was like, did you guys design this to look like a dog so that people would, you know, adapt to it better? It wouldn't freak them out as much that there's a robot? And he's like, no, it just was the best design for getting in and out of places. They said, like, whatever it is, that dog design, they can actually climb and do a bunch of stuff easier than any other design. And then the guy goes, but it helps that it can pose.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, all right, that's fair, yeah.
Well, have you seen some of the videos where they were testing the stability of the robots and they're like kicking it and pushing it and hitting it? And like they faced a lot of backlash, like just publicly, because people like kind of just related the robot to an actual dog and they felt like it was abuse. And there was a lot of backlash to those videos.
So animal abuse on a robotic dog.
Yes. I mean, and it's really interesting, just the psychology of the human beings just imposed the idea of a dog on the robot. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there was a lot of backlash.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can see it. I know we need to get the names of those people so that when, you know, they become self-aware and they come looking for somebody, we can give them those people and not us. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But yeah. Manifest was awesome. You know, I heard that this year it was a lot larger than it was last year. This was my first year going. Mm-hmm. I was actually really impressed with a lot of the setups that a lot of companies had. You know, one, for example, I think the one that really took the cake was Platform Science.
Platform Science was amazing.
Yep.
Yeah. Their setup was amazing.
I mean, they rolled an entire semi truck in with the trailer, the whole side folded down. They had their whole setup inside. Like, that was impressive.
Yeah, I was curious how they drove that thing into it, because we're talking about like a large banquet hall at the Caesars Forum, essentially. And they drove a full semi truck and trailer into that like conference space.
Yeah, I was confused on how they got in there. I didn't see any bay doors or anything.
I know. So yeah, I don't know.
Magic.
It's magic.
Yeah, pretty cool. Tell us a little bit about Platform Science. You're familiar with them.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting product. I mean, they're basically a software ecosystem that they drop hardware on the truck, and then they have multiple vendors that write software apps to do everything from like electronic logging to driver safety and so on. And you just can, you know, fleet owners can select which apps they want, drop it right onto the platform, and then give their drivers more functionality.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Like, the level of technology going into like what most people would probably think of traditionally archaic industries, right? Like, think of trucking, warehousing, more physical type operations are kind of the first to be innovating on these things of like robotics and telematics and everything. I mean, I even saw they had a remote worker driving a forklift. So he was sitting at the conference driving a forklift in a real warehouse in the US. And that's insane. That's crazy. I mean, I've spent years in warehousing, and definitely the shortages of labor hit there first, so it makes sense. But, you know, I think most people think of those industries as more archaic, but you're actually seeing, you know, technology advancing faster in those industries.
Yeah, it's actually exploding. You know, one of the interesting things I saw at the Consumer Electronics Show back at the beginning of January, Caterpillar. They actually had an excavator and a bulldozer. And I don't remember exactly where they were located. I think it was somewhere in Illinois. But they actually had it out in a construction field. And people were sitting in their booth in Vegas, controlling it and excavating and watching it happen, like on all the screens with all the cameras set up, and all in real time. So I even jumped in there and I moved a couple buckets of dirt.
No, did you really?
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Oh, wow.
That was incredible.
What do you think is like next for that? right? I mean, if you're looking at heavy equipment, if you're looking at forklifts, all remote operated, they seem to be working and they seem to be getting some adoption. Like, where does it go from there? Is it like, I mean, I think of, Terry, your background is like a Marine. Is it like tanks? Are they going to be remote controlled like drones, or is it going to be planes that you fly in for commercial aircraft are going to be able to be drone piloted? Like, what do you think is next?
Well, I think the thing that most people don't realize is most of it's already automated. I mean, as a pilot, in a large aircraft, you're mostly a supervisor. Like, you take off, you set the autopilot, and then you just spin dials until it's time for landing. And then even with some of the new, more advanced landing systems, like planes will land themselves. Like, there's some of the new Pipers, the Cirrus Vision Jet is another one. They actually have a return home feature. So like, if the pilot becomes incapacitated, a passenger can just flip a switch. It goes into fly home mode. It'll select the airport. It'll communicate for you. It'll line up, shoot the approach, and touch down.
Like, it'll even communicate
autonomously.
For you.
Yep. Autonomously.
So it'll land all by itself then?
All by itself. It's crazy. Like, people don't realize that this technology is there. And I think with, even with the warehousing, look at like one of the other companies we saw at Manifest, Kodiak. Mm-hmm. They've got a level 4 autonomous truck, now. So it's a semi truck, completely drives itself. Right now they still got the driver, in the truck to take over. But I think, last I talked to them, I think they said within the next year and a half, 2 years, they expect to be no driver in vehicle, fully autonomous, at point A to point B, hauling cargo.
And that's they have that in the field right now, don't they?
Yeah, they're actively driving. I think they've got a couple of routes across the southern United States. Actually, there's a couple of different trucking companies that are doing autonomous trucking that are mostly running the I-10 corridor through Texas, Arizona, California. And the reason is the weather's pretty stable along I-10. It's just bloody hot and barren. And so that's a really good place to start testing a lot of the technology, where you're not dealing with like what we deal with here in Nebraska and, you know, icy roads and snow and all that kind of stuff.
Sure. And I got to ask this question because, you know, as the probably least technical person here, how does that work with, like, is it all off of something similar to a GPS where it's using a satellite to connect and talk to it? Is it like its own Wi-Fi system within the cab? Like, how does that work so that they can stay connected to it? Because isn't there a possibility that they could get disconnected as like a remote driver, or even the autonomous system talking to something to get its coordinates and routes and everything?
Yeah, it's what we would call like a multi-sensor system. So yeah, you've got GPS for location, but a lot of them have cameras on it, and they're actually doing computer vision on platform. So they're doing everything from looking at, you know, speed limit signs to, you know, the lines painted on the road, the geometries of the road, other vehicles on the road. I mean, they're just sucking in tons and tons of data and making decisions on the platform for exactly where the semi truck should be in the lane, you know, how fast it should be going, what it should be doing to avoid traffic, changing lanes, you know, all that stuff. And I can't say I'm an expert on computer vision or any of the machine learning that goes behind all the autonomous vehicle technology. But from my understanding is most of it is done all on platform.
Wow.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of the autonomous vehicles there that had a whole bunch of LIDARs all around the cabs. So it scans the street so it can see people, it can see cars, all that kind of stuff. So I think that's like their primary thing that they use. Again, I don't know for sure. There's probably a whole bunch of different options, but LIDAR seemed like a very prominent thing that they had on those vehicles.
Wow. That's pretty interesting. And so those systems, they do connect externally then, is that right?
I'm sure they do. I'm sure they've got an uplink. I'm sure they're monitoring, the status of the vehicle, location of the vehicle, things like that. What that looks like, I don't know.
Sure. Yeah. I really wonder what the future of that looks like with an autonomous truck, if there ends up being any kind of like regulation or anything with having a driver in cab. Again, back to that remote thing. I wonder if it's like you can just log into your computer and you are monitoring that truck. You know, that'll be interesting to see how that goes in the future. But
I mean, we're already doing that with drones in combat.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, we've got guys sitting in Connex boxes in, you know, Nevada, flying drones, you know, all throughout the Middle East, in real time through satellite uplinks and downlinks. And it's really interesting. A lot of science and a lot of technology is led by the military. That's one of the sad things about war is even though war is very tragic and there's a lot of loss of life and it's never a good thing, you get a lot of technology, medical science and stuff out of it. So like with drones and flying them remotely, you know, that's one of those things that came out years and years ago on the military side. And now we're starting to see it, you know, even on the commercial sector.
Do you think that's because they're trying to focus more on the safety of the troops that we have out there? So that's why they're doing more of the remote control of drones and on all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. I mean, in military, and I can tell you this from my military days, everything goes down to, protecting, putting people in harm's way mm-hmm. is ultimately what it is. And if you can avoid putting someone in harm's way, of course you want to do that. Because, obviously, one of the worst things that can happen is loss of life.
Yep.
And so if you can get better armor on your vehicles, you can prevent loss of life. If you can just not put people in the vehicles to begin with, you can prevent loss of life. But with that also becomes not just the, saving the pilot or saving, the driver of the tank or whatever else, but it's also protecting everyone around it. Mm-hmm. Because you've got civilians, in modern warfare, you're in urban environments. So you got to worry about, civilian casualties. You got to worry about battle damage and all that. So there's more to the technology than just like, wow, this is cool. Like it can drive itself. It needs to drive itself in a way that is safe. And that doesn't put anybody else at risk. And that goes back to the commercial trucking, right? Like, we're driving around on the interstate every day, going to and from work. We got our families in the car and all that. How do we know that that technology is solid? And how does that technology make decisions to protect life, both either in the vehicle, if it's a self-driving car and you're in it, or if you're somewhere around it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Have you had experience working in any of those types of systems, like those autonomous systems? I know, obviously, Fleet Defender working with, cyber protection for those types of systems. But I know that you have a lot of experience with like CAN networks and how the vehicle kind of all works together to operate. Those systems, I got to assume that inputting them is almost like making a whole new car, is because you're plugging all of these, machine learning and different things into all of these CAN systems and ECUs to operate differently than they have in the past. And so is that something that you see in the future, like the overall design of cars or the way they operate as a whole, if they are fully autonomous, will change?
Oh yeah, 100%. So, you've got, bolt-on systems. Like, for example, like the very first drones that we had in the military for flying drones were like old F-4 Phantoms or other older aircraft that they would bolt these packages on, basically just add all this stuff to it. And then they could fly it remotely. And then they would use them for target practice with other planes and stuff. And so like the plane was not built to be autonomous. It became autonomous by adding technology to it. But what we're seeing now is we're actually seeing like all the autonomy being built into the vehicles. So you actually have like Teslas, they're being built specifically for, the Tesla Autopilot to have it drive itself. You've got, all the different semi trucks that are starting to come out that are built specifically to be autonomous. So the technology is not a bolt on, it's actually designed in from the beginning.
That'd be pretty interesting if they use that bolt on system for existing vehicles. Like, let's say everything went to autonomous because it's proved out to work, it's proved out to be safer, and that just becomes, regulation or law in, say, 50 years or something, is that people with existing vehicles using a bolt-on system to turn, my 2019 Honda Civic into a autonomous vehicle. That'd be pretty interesting.
It would. I don't know what the cost would be on that and how that would work. I personally would love it. I always joke and say, like, when I was a kid, we were promised flying cars in 2000. Mm-hmm. And now it's 2023. Like, we don't even have like self-driving cars, like fully self-driving yet. So I feel like they lied to us. But I can't wait for the days of full autonomy. Mm-hmm. I think, just the safety aspect alone will be well worth the cost.
Yeah.
So do you think that with fully autonomous vehicles, the more they advance and come out, are they going to switch to more electric vehicles, do you think, for autonomous? Or do you think they'll stick with the traditional ones, that the gas and diesel?
I'll tell you, from Manifest, just from seeing what we saw there, it seemed a lot more electric. It seemed like they were looking at, what are things changing to and moving towards like electric vehicles. And so there was a lot more electric vehicles going on there, especially when you're talking about autonomous. But there were definitely gas vehicles still, as well as alternative fuels. And I think you've talked with a few alternative fuel-based manufacturers of trucks and OEMs. And so that's pretty interesting too, is like the hydrogen fuels coming out and everything. So it might not even be electric. It could just be an alternate fuel source altogether.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I was at the Consumer Electronics Show, I spent some time over at Packer's booth and, you know, they had one of their fully electric vehicles, you know, semi-tractor trailers. They had one of their hydrogen fuel cell vehicles, and it was really interesting. You know, with any of those, infrastructure is going to be important. You got to be able to charge it. You got to be able to refuel it. You know, all that kind of stuff is going to be really important. But I do feel that sustainability and sustainable technology is going to be the future. Mm-hmm. You know, there's only so much oil. There's only, you know, so much that we can make petroleum-based kind of products. And at some point, it's going to run out. And whether you're a believer in global warming or whether you're a non-believer in global warming, it doesn't really matter. Ultimately, you know, until Elon Musk gets all this stuff figured out, like, this is the earth that we got, and we're not going anywhere. And so we have to make it last. Now that means we got to make smart decisions and move forward in a smart way. And I do really like seeing the electric vehicle stuff come out. Like, I don't think we're there yet. Like, we couldn't fully adopt across the board. I mean, we just had problems when the temperatures dipped really, really low. Everybody's Tesla's battery was running out because the cold weather, you know, wouldn't hold a charge. And people were worried about getting home. So there's still a lot of technological challenges that we have to overcome and find solutions for before we can really see, like, electric vehicles, you know, completely take over the market. I'm excited to see if we get there in my lifetime, but I do think it's something we should be doing.
So with going fully electric, what kind of issues do you foresee, or any, like, say, vulnerabilities that could come with a fully electric vehicle?
A lot of it's the same as, like, current combustion engine vehicles or hydrogen fuel cell vehicles. I mean, pretty much every vehicle that's made today, it's nothing more than a fancy computer mm-hmm. with wheels. You know, 80 fancy computers with wheels. You know, these electronic control units or ECUs, you know, there's so many of them in the vehicle, and they're all connected through different networks. You know, you've, like, right now, controller area network, or CAN, is kind of the big one because it's been regulated for decades. Automotive Ethernet's a big one that's coming up that can handle a lot more bandwidth, a lot more traffic. So you're seeing a lot more of that being put into, like, John Deere tractors, or sorry, maybe not John Deere tractors, but I know, some other, you know, agriculture equipment's getting them because you can handle a lot more camera feeds, you know, all the digital data that's coming off of the LiDAR, the cameras and things like that. You can handle the bandwidth a lot better on automotive Ethernet. And so we're going to start seeing proliferation of different, you know, networks on the vehicle. They're going to architect them. We are thinking about security now. So, like, they're already starting looking at, like, putting gateways and firewalls and stuff on these control system networks. We're nowhere close to where we need to be. But so back to your question of, you know, do I see, like, electric vehicles having more or less vulnerabilities? I would say the same number of vulnerabilities as the other vehicle types, but those number of vulnerabilities continue to grow because the attack surface is growing. Mm-hmm. Because the more wireless sensors we add, the more interfaces we add, the more communications that we add, it's just more and more software that humans write, and humans are flawed. Mm-hmm. And so we're never going to design a perfectly secure system without bugs.
So it's just creating more avenues for potential attacks and threats then.
Yeah. And that's kind of what we call, like, attack vectors. So, like, you look at a vehicle and you say, what's the attack surface of the vehicle? And so you look at every possible data input, every possible data output. And so you look at, you know, TPMS, cameras, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, cellular, you know, even FM, AM radio, because they're all software defined radios now. Like, it's no longer like dedicated hardware that you're, you know, changing crystals and transistors of, you know, for the radio, but it's all software defined. And so, again, software, there's the key word, mm-hmm. And therefore possible vulnerabilities. And so as we add all these different things, just that attack surface continues to grow and grow and grow. And, you know, that's just a much higher potential for vulnerabilities that could be exploited.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I didn't realize, you know, for years how almost every input nowadays in modern cars runs through an ECU. Is that right? Like, everything kind of runs through some type of software before the engine actually outputs what you want it to do.
Or any actuator in a vehicle. You know, you got sensors and actuators and computers. And yeah, that's really true. Like, even everything from, like, door locks, like, you press the button, you're not, like, mechanically moving something anymore. Like, when you, you know, go to roll the window down or up, you're not cranking a shaft and moving some mechanical connection. You're pushing a button that's telling a computer to send a signal to a motor, you know, usually a CAN message over the CAN network or a LIN network. LIN is another one that's used in a lot of automotive areas of some of this stuff. And so it's actually sending a digital signal to a motor, which then that motor is interpreting, and then or a computer attached to the motor is interpreting and then driving the motor to move the window up and down. So everything's computerized.
Wow. Yeah, that is actually really interesting. But, you know, I want to take us back a little bit to the Manifest conference, because I know we saw some really cool things, especially, you know, Fleet Defender, we were able to be a part of the ZBox Pavilion. Terry, you were able to speak on the innovation stage, actually kind of about what we just talked about and the need for, you know, cybersecurity on these platforms. But wanted to talk a little bit about ZBox, because that was a really cool experience. Getting to meet their team was really awesome. You know, would love to hear your thoughts on kind of, you know, working with ZBox and being part of their pavilion and speaking on their innovation stage.
Yeah, ZBox is pretty awesome. It's an innovation accelerator. We actually just joined ZBox, what was it, last month, early January,
yeah,
I think?
Yeah, early January.
Yeah, so we just became a member of the ZBox accelerator. And they're, you know, it's awesome. You know, just like most accelerators, you know, they look at doing both incubation of technology, but also acceleration of technology to the market. And they're partnered with, I mean, lots of logistics companies all over the world, not just the United States or North America, but they're worldwide. And so you have, you know, the accelerator itself, ZBox, is, you know, was created and I believe funded through the founding partner, which is CMA CGM. So a huge logistics company. And then they've partnered with many different companies across the world.
Yeah, so, I think they're international, right?
Yeah, they're international. Yeah. So like BNP Paribas, Cargomatic, Centromatic, you know, even Burlington North Santa Fe, BNSF, you know, Railways, they're a partner as well.
Oh, wow.
And they also have multiple ports around the world also as partners as well. So it's really interesting, because what they'll do is they'll take, you know, a company like Fleet Defender, and, you know, we're a startup. We've got a technology that we're rolling out. We've got some customers. We got revenue coming in, and we're solving a very interesting niche problem within the cybersecurity platform kind of market. And what they'll do is they'll help us get the word out, and they'll put us in front of their partners. So like if they think that or we think that our solution would be good in, you know, locomotives, for example, they'll put us in front of BNSF and get us those connections. That way we can at least have a chance to go in and talk to their leadership about what we're doing and see if there's a good fit there. And so, yeah, they do a lot of that, just acceleration, and help connect you to partners throughout their space.
Yeah, pretty cool. I remember one of the people that we met there was actually somebody from like the Port of Halifax. Was really cool, right? It's like, how often do you meet people from ports? And they were even telling us, you know, as a smaller port to compete, they built like an innovation hub. And so even they're thinking about this, right? Like they're, even these ports, which you would think of as just, you know, the cranes offloading ships, are looking at innovations, looking at machine learning, how they can optimize and protect what they have. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And, you know, that's the thing is, I think we've known for a really long time that large companies, you know, with growth comes bureaucracy. It happens, you know, like when you're managing thousands and thousands or tens of thousands of people, like you've just got to layer on a lot of different layers. And a lot of times bureaucracy is the antithesis of innovation. And so you see a lot of innovation in small startups. And, you know, there's always the big joke that if a big company wants to be innovative, they just go buy small companies.
Yeah, that's true.
And you know, that's how they bring in innovation and stuff. And so,
yeah, it's like the old Bell Laboratories model doesn't really exist anymore. They kind of outsourced it to startups, which is, I mean, great, because there's an opportunity for entrepreneurs and, you know, really anybody with a good idea to create a technology and have the potential to be purchased by a large company, which is typically the goal, especially for any, you know, venture backed startup. But you know, I don't hate the economic model of it.
No, and you're exactly right. Like I personally love entrepreneurship. You know, as somebody who's started and grown multiple companies, and you know, I'm always pushing, you know, entrepreneurship to people. Like if you have an idea, like you never know where it's going to go unless you actually try it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'd love it. I mean, even down to our kids, you know, I think one is working on a concept for a restaurant, you know, Cheese Frenchies.
Yes, and I've had your kids' cheese
fries. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're really a customer. Yeah, yeah. So he actually took over our kitchen and put me and my wife to work, actually.
Like, oh, awesome.
I wasn't expecting to be an employee. I was expecting to be an investor, but it turned out I was both. So we had to kind of realign things after that. And the same thing, our daughter, you know, she, one of our daughters, our oldest is doing soaps, like making soaps and some of that type of stuff. And then the youngest daughter is looking at like lip balms and bracelets and, you know, kind of cute stuff. I mean, for an 11-year-old, she's selling bracelets and all that. So yeah, entrepreneurship is great. And, it's always good when you can actually, find people that align with your values and want to help you, and get your company going. And that's something that we found with ZBox. Like, you know, Charlie and Jonathan, Sarah, Liv, like all of them are just amazing human beings that, that really helps. Like it was even to the point where they were walking us around making introductions, like on the floor. It was just great.
It's really easy to give somebody a booth. It's harder to, you know, put yourself out there to make connections for people, you know, and that's really cool. It's really cool they did that.
But yeah, so Manifest was fantastic. Love the conference. I'm really looking forward to next year. But we've got a lot more coming up, don't we?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. So we'll actually be at the Bulk Loads conference this week, depending on when this comes out.
And that's in Springfield, Missouri?
Springfield, Missouri. Yep. You'll be speaking on a panel there about cybersecurity and long-haul tractor trailers, which is great. And then we'll actually be at TMC down in Orlando, Florida at the end of February. So if you're around there, come by and see our booth.
But this is our first like big booth.
This is our first big booth. Yeah. So we've got the big booth coming out. We've got our demo as well of kind of our, you know, 3D experience of cyber attacking a truck while it's moving down the road. So kind of cool. Stop by and check us out.
Now when we say big booth, we're not driving a semi truck in. We're not Platform Science or Kodiak yet. Not there. We're not there.
But we will be at some point. Yeah. I know we actually have a Daimler truck on a test bed here in the office. And so at some point we need to take that to a show and just show people how we can hack it remotely as well as protect it. So kind of interesting, but we'll be all over the country as well as the world this year with different conferences and shows. I know we'll be at Auto ISAC. We'll be at AutoTech, both in the U.S. as well as in Europe. So, if you're around at any of these conferences, come by and say hi and check us out.
Yeah. And speaking of Auto ISAC, this podcast should be released after the press release, right? So can we say what's going on?
Yeah, let's go ahead and say it.
So we're a member of Auto ISAC. They voted. Yeah. January, their membership group voted on us. And Fleet Defender is now a full partner and member of Auto ISAC.
That's a big step.
Get some of the applause sound effects going on there. Yeah. So that was super exciting. And, you know, so not only joining the ZBox Accelerator, becoming an Auto ISAC member. Yeah. Just things are really moving for us. It's just, I can't even believe it. It's fantastic.
Yeah. It's great.
There's so much that has happened in the last year or so with the company. So moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, if you'd like to learn more about Fleet Defender, check out fleetdefender.com. That's FLEETDEFENDER.com. And be on the lookout for our next podcast. So we'll be coming to you every week with different cybersecurity news, topics, and just conversations that we have. So thank you for listening and joining today.
Yeah, we'll thanks everybody.
Week. All right.
Bye. See ya.